This is Steve Lorch with Table Rock Tea Company, and you are watching the Farmers Market Podcast.
Keep it fresh, keep it local, celebrate the heart of the community focal. From veggies to honey, there's so much to see. The Farmers Market Podcast is the place to be.
Great day, everybody. Welcome to the Farmers Market Podcast, where we keep it fresh, we keep it local. I'm your host, Stefan Holt, and today we're excited to have a very special guest joining us a second time. He's been on the podcast before. We're talking with Steve Lorch, co-founder and CEO of Table Rock Tea Company. With their connectivity fund, Steve and Jennifer are giving back in big ways, and here to tell us all about it is Steve Lorch. Welcome to the podcast, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, I know some people out there may have kind of a background of the Table Rock Tea Company, but give us a little bit of what the Table Rock Tea Company is. But first, I have to ask you about the fires that are happening in the mountains right now that started on March 23rd. How is that going?
Yeah, so it's actually gotten worse. We haven't really had rain here, so it's unfortunately spreading. I think it's over 1,500 acres already.
Oh, wow.
They just did a mandatory evacuation about a mile away from us, but it's headed away from us as well. So I think we're safe at the tea farm, but yeah, it's going to be another one of those Helene type things for this area for sure.
You were showing some videos literally, was it just yesterday and even over the weekend? Like it was in your backyard.
Yeah. Well, right across the highway. So it's Cherokee Foothill Scenic Highway 11, which isn't really a highway. It's just a two-lane scenic kind of thing. But pretty much we're on the south side and Table Rock's on the north side. The whole mountain was pretty much on fire.
Holy smokes. I mean, we've had a lot of fire. The fires out in California, the fires in Hawaii, and now, especially. How did you guys do during Helene when all of that was happening kind of up in your neighborhood as well?
Yeah. So the thing with Helene for us, we didn't really have too much damage. We lost, part of the roof on the greenhouse, which we were able to repair pretty quick. Several large trees and stuff, but we were out of power for about 10 days, but the area itself got hit really hard. Pretty much everybody was helping each other with chainsaws. We jokingly say it's probably not even a joke. I think there are more chainsaws in Pumpkin Town where I live than people. I know I have two, and pretty much everybody I know has multiples, but,
holy smokes.
So we were all helping each other out, but the big problem with us, is that it wiped out, all of October and half of November, which is the peak, tourist season right here.
Right. So for those who don't know about tea growing, well, first off, let's kind of back up a little bit. How did you get started for those who've never heard your story?
Sure. So the short story is be careful about what your hobbies turn into. my wife and I are the founders of a missions agency called Hydro Missions International. So you can look that up. It's hydromissions, like watermissions.org. They're still up and running, but we ran that agency for about 10 years, handed it off to the next generation in 2011. But while we were at the helm, it took us to about 30 some countries, something like that. And we did all kinds of water projects all over the world, still do. And one of those was Kenya in 2006. And we did a water well in an elementary school up in the northern country, northern part of Kenya. And Kenya grows 20% of the world's tea. I didn't even drink tea at the time. And so we were doing this project just surrounded by tea fields and, kind of got fascinated by it, came home. Again, this is 2006, so the internet was fairly young for those people of a certain age that can't imagine life without internet.
Right.
And so I bought a little plant online and stuck it in the ground in our little suburban home, didn't think much of it. And then we bought our homestead out here near Table Rock, and we wanted to do like a useful hedgerow. And so he said, well, why don't we do tea? Well, at that time, it wasn't like you could call Lipton and, hey, how do you grow tea?
Right.
They'll take my calls now, but not then. And, So we kind of had to figure it out from scratch. I bought a bunch of seeds, and we figured out we needed about 400 or 500 plants to do this hedgerow. We thought, well, I bet that makes a lot of tea. Why don't we just start a tea company? And so we did. And now here we are. Now, goodness, well, 2006. So, you know, getting on 20 years, you know, you know, we've got 30 acres and, you know, 50,000 plants. And we're really the second most prominent tea farm in the continental U.S. So, like I said, one thing leads to another, and here we are. So,
yeah, it's amazing. I did a little bit of research trying to figure out from the last time we even talked, which was, I think, 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't that many farms. I think the last count, there's 60, I think, at least that's what the
yeah,
there's 60 farms, but in various sizes and various production, I guess, processes.
Right.
There's only two in South Carolina. There's the big one down in Charleston. And I think they have 127 acres, and their claim to fame, I guess, is the basically fully mechanized tea processing.
Right.
And you're the only one in South Carolina, and that's it.
Yeah. So we've helped a lot of people start. And so it's kind of a little bit, you know, it depends on what you, I guess, consider a tea farm, you know, right. As far as the numbers, like if you go on, like we're not part of U.S. League of Tea Growers and neither is Charleston, but you know, if you go on that website, you'll see that there's about 60 or something like that. Most of those are, you know, acre or less and stuff, you know, there's a lot of hobby going on, which is fine. We kind of define like a tea farm proper as, you know, are you FDA, USDA, you know, and creating a big brand, you know. When you break it down like that, there's really less than half a dozen of us.
Right.
So, and yeah. two of us are in South Carolina. So.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, it's, yeah. And you don't think of the United States producing tea. I mean, you just.
Oh, we produce less than like 0.001%.
But you produce a lot for us in the upstate. So that's good. But you mentioned how big again is your tea farm?
So our farm is 30 acres and we currently have about 15 under cultivation.
Okay.
Wow. In various stages. Now, to put that in perspective, you know, and this is not to, you know, spill the beans on Charleston or whatever, but I know this from their founders.
You know those guys, right? Don't you know those
guys? I do.
Guys?
They're actually friends of ours, and we help each other out and support each other. We're in the same, you know, agritourism association and all that stuff. So I have nothing but good to say about Charleston.
This is not like a Clemson Gamecock rivalry thing that y'all got.
No, not at all. not with us. You know, and I knew, you know, Bill Hall and Mac Fleming both, you know, and but Charleston's on 128, but they only have 25 acres planted. Wow. You know, so we're, you know, we're at 15, so and very, you know, theirs are mature, ours are still developing, you know.
That's interesting. And what exactly, okay, because I saw recently you have some tea plants. This is the time, isn't this the time of year to plant the tea plants? I think you have, oh, there you go. Ta-da. Yeah, exactly. So you've got that going right now where people can purchase, I believe. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes. So we don't ship the plants because we can, but shipping, live plants, you have to deal with all the fire ant stuff and going across the borders and that kind of thing. So we, you can pick up plants. We've got thousands for sale. And we sell thousands every year. We ship seeds, but seeds are, only available. We only do that when they're fresh and viable. So that's going to be like, September, October, that kind of thing. Really, really fall, late fall.
So tell us a little seeds. Bit about all the different plants and the different tea types and varieties that you guys are producing and then what's available on site.
Sure. So there's, so this is one of the biggest things. If you come out for a tour, which by the way, we do tours, we're closed to the public January, February, but we do tours March through December. And we do tours Thursday through Sunday, 10 o'clock and 2 p.m. And our tours always get full, and so definitely come out for a tour. They're free. They're about an hour long, and they're I have zero qualms saying that they are the most educational tea tour in the world. We've been to many, and hands down, our tour, you'll learn more on our tour than anywhere in the world.
But you got to RSVP, right? You have to RSVP.
It's a good thing to do because we do fill up and we do have certain capacity. So, but back to your question, and I mentioned the tours because one of the most intriguing facts about tea that you learn on the tour is that all true tea comes from this one plant. So green tea, black tea, oolong tea, orange pekoe, all that kind of stuff. It comes from Camellia sinensis. That is the one and only true tea plant in the world.
Really? So, now, I didn't know that. Oh, holy smokes.
Yeah, and that's what we grow here. And that's why our trademark slogan is Real American Tea. Because, because tea has been kind of, hijacked in a way, kind of like Kleenex, you know what I mean? It's kind of, so people basically call whatever you put in water, you know, leaves in water go, you know, makes tea. So if they say, you know, I drink chamomile tea. Well, no, you drink chamomile. It's not tea. There's no tea in it. So tea is this plant. This is the only tea plant. And so, that's pretty unique because again, it's not something that most people grow. So. American tea is rare.
So you have the seeds right there. So you're harvesting the seeds and saving those for the next, I guess, plant cycle.
Oh, yeah. I think we harvested about 250,000 seeds this year, something like that.
Oh, my. Now, where did you get your seeds? If you started there, how did that come about?
Yeah. So our seeds originated from India, which is another rare thing as well, because most, the like hobby farms that you would find listed in those, you know, 60 or whatever, tend to be pulling from Asia, China and some South Korea, that kind of stuff. And ours are, Indian. They're a Somica variety, and that's, more subtropical. It was just what we started growing here before we knew any better. It's funny because now, you know, all the experts, I guess I am one now, they all said, you can't grow a Somica variant there. And, so we'll tell that to my 10,000 plants at the time, you know, we've just been doing it. And, it's rare to have this particular subspecies, because it tends to be less, cold hardy. So it goes dormant in the winter. I mean, it still stays green, but it just stops producing for about half the year.
So you've been doing this for a while, obviously 2006 is what I think you mentioned that earlier. What's kind of one of the most interesting things you've learned about growing tea here in the state? Cause I know you've probably visited tea farms in other countries, but
yeah,
what have you learned about specifically here in South Carolina and the Carolinas?
Right. Well, you got to play to your strengths and you have to know your microclimate. I think that's the biggest thing is like, yeah, there are general guidelines, but, you know, we have to deal with certain areas of our farm, even on our 30 acres are harder to grow than others. You know, we have this one field that's like the showpiece, field that's taking forever to get going, because it gets hit with wind and they hate wind, you know?
I mean, we've been getting a lot of it lately, and that's probably part reason that the fires are continuing. But that's the worst weather phenomena for a farmer, in my mind.
Yeah,
a light breeze is great. A wind?
Yeah, we get heavy gusts, and you know, so that field was really hard to get started. You know, once you have tea, though, that's the other cool thing. Like, this is a legacy crop. You know, this is not, we are very meticulous on actually mapping out the tea fields because once you get the tea established, it's going to live for several hundred years. So it's going to go well beyond my lifetime. So
The plant. So let's go back to the plant that you have for sale. If I come and pick up, let's say three or four, I'm not taking these and immediately dropping them in my yard, or am I putting them in a bigger pot? Do you guys get?
No, you're putting them in the pot. So, and now is, the perfect time, you know, it likes early spring. That's the first best time to plant. The next best time is in the fall. But if you're just doing a few plants, you can plant pretty much any time through the spring and summer and early fall.
And what's the growth
because
rate
we're commercial.
What's the growth rate in terms of size? What am I looking at? The plant you had looked about 8 to 12 inches, but what are we talking about in terms of maximum?
It's going to take 5 years to reach maturity.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the long game for sure. It's
it's like raising kids.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
The long game.
And, yeah, for sure. But it's, you know, it's a really cool plant. And like I said, it'll be here long after we're dead and gone. That's my big task is figuring out how to leave it for the people after me, you know, so I'm taking notes on what to do in 2075, you know, you're going to need to do this in this field, you know, that kind of thing.
So are there journals, the Steve Lorch journals that are being documented up on your shelf? Do you have
right here right now?
You're going to have to spit all that stuff out on paper or on digitize it or something.
Sure. Yeah, I did sort of a shameless plug, but you know, I literally wrote the book on how to grow and make tea in the United States. So that's available on Amazon. You can pick it up there.
Or they can pick it up at your shop, right?
Or at our store or online at our shop. But yeah, Amazon's the easiest one.
So you talked about the tea plants are going to be there for a very long time, but you're also making an impact with your charity fund. Tell us a little bit about that as well.
Right. Yeah. So 10% of every dollar right off the top goes into this fund. We call it Connectivity Fund, Connectivity, TEA, very clever.
It's a tongue twister for sure.
Yeah. And that's used, you know, we did so much work all over the world in developing countries with water, and now we kind of do the same thing with tea. We really like micro enterprise mission type stuff. And so we use that fund to help small scale tea farmers get started. We kind of take out, this is a very interesting thing that you're asking me about, because I'm actually trying to work on a TED talk if they ever accept me for the talk.
Really?
Yeah. On charitable giving, entrepreneurialism and risk. And it all ties together with the Connectivity Fund because, I'm an entrepreneur and, I'm like a thoroughbred entrepreneur. It doesn't mean I'm a good businessman. You know, people sometimes confuse the two. I mean, I've got friends that just everything they touch,
you
it's always
be the
money.
Boss.
You know,
you want to do your thing.
Yeah. 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 I do things because I think they're cool. And that's kind of what entrepreneurs do. I mean, if you look up the definition, it basically, it assumes risk. That's the main thing. Like, so entrepreneurialism is synonymous with risk. And in order for risk to truly be risk, it has to have the not just probability or possibility, but the probability of failure. Otherwise, it's not risk. So if you have all these safety nets, you know, it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't factor into risk. The problem is when you do these charitable works in places, you can only risk really what you can afford to lose. And if you can't afford to lose anything, because you know, if that venture fails, you starve, you know, or your family starves, it really quenches that entrepreneurial spirit in a lot of these places. Well, it really does. And we've seen, so we go to these places that seem to be, you know, they're always playing it safe and they always then kind of remain in sort of a cycle of poverty, you know? And so what we do is mitigate the elite, what we call the lethal risk, because the problem is, you have to have some risk because you have to have skin in the game. Otherwise, the project will fail. You know what I mean? So there is going hungry is a motivator.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No. When your back's against the wall. Yeah. You got to either.
Yeah.
You know, it's fight or flight.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Hunger is a motivator. Starvation is a death sentence. So what we try to do, and we try to take away the lethal part. We got a lot going on here with the fires. You know, everybody's all nervous.
Right.
So,
right. So you're giving people a runway to at least.
Yeah. Yeah. We're basically saying, look, we'll take on the main capital parts, but you still have to put in a lot of risk.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah, that's a different twist on the philanthropy part of that. So now I know you got a lot going on right now. How can people find you? I'm going to ask you a few more questions, but how can people find you and get in touch with you? I know you've got the website, but go ahead and list all the different places people can find you and connect.
The big thing, we've got, of course, our website, tablerocktea.com. We've got our YouTube channel, Instagram, do a little bit on Instagram. I mostly run through Facebook. So if you want to be updated, we're not a spammy kind of thing. We do updates that are legit. You know what I mean? I'm not going to, and honestly, we don't do any advertising in the sense of, you're not going to see 10% off of this. And we're, shooting you stuff like that. Right. I don't have time for that. You know what I mean? I'm doing podcasts and writing books, man. That's how it works.
Right. No. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what
you're trying to run a tea farm.
Tell us what's next. What you had some big projects a while ago.
Yeah.
Those projects have kind of come to fruition, but what do you have on the radar for Table Rock Tea Company?
Yeah. So I'm shooting here, in our store, which, I'm going to pick this up. I'll be very careful.
Yeah, no, try that'd to be great. Give people.
So this is our new store and tea museum.
Okay. Now so you were talking about this a few years back.
Yep. Yep. So we bought the neighbor's property and renovated the barn. And, this is really cool thing. We call it the Real American Tea Museum.
That's awesome.
And it's a legit museum. It's got all kinds of cool artifacts on the history of the industry side of tea, the commerce and how it kind of changed the world commercially. There's just all kinds of cool artifacts that we have in here.
You got you and Jennifer when you were younger?
Kind of. I mean, the logo, if you look at the logo on the packaging, it's a 10-year younger version of me, I suppose. But we actually have what's really cool. I'm pretty proud of this because I do a presentation series at different tea festivals and symposiums around the country, on the history of U.S. tea. And so on the, there's a back wall over there that actually has a timeline, a really cool pictorial and text timeline of the history of U.S. tea from when the first plants arrived, just as botanical stuff, all the way to our farm in 2014.
So you're going to have to, I'm going to have to come up there and visit when the fires are settled.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. So, let me ask you this. I know a lot of the folks I've interviewed have either been vendors at farmers markets. I know you have a little bit of experience with farmers markets, right? Just a little?
A little. Yeah. Yeah. So farmers markets are great. And we did them until about 5 years ago. And we get so many people here now. I mean, we see thousands of people a year. So, we sold our farmers market. We had our T-Mobile that we brought over and VIP stuff like that.
Pass.
Yeah. It was just too much. You know what I mean? To take that 6 hours or whatever on a Saturday, we get that kind of foot traffic here just, in an hour.
I think that's the progression of somebody that starts at a farmer's market. Now, a lot of people just stay at a farmer's market because that's it and they don't need to.
Yep.
But other people try to bring, if they have a big farm and they try to do part of that agro-tourism component, which you guys have done very successfully.
Yes. And that's another big key component. So you mentioned Charleston. That's the thing that Charleston and us are really the only ones that do agritourism for real. And I don't say that disparaging on anybody else, but even some of the others that do tours, they're by appointment only, that kind of stuff. It's very limited. Charleston and us in the U.S. are the only ones that are full bore open to the public, real agritourism and it's a way different animal than, a lot of places are maybe wedding or event venues with a patch of tea attached to it, which is fine, which is totally fine. I'm not knocking that, But that's a very different animal than saying, hey, we're a agritourism tea farm. It's way different beast.
Now, when you guys set up shop there, how did the community kind of come together to either support you or help you? Or, I mean, yeah, I know it's depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
I think what I'm finding out with the farmers markets is community is everything, at least to the vendors, and they're trying to engage and people are coming up and asking them questions. And I know you guys experience that, you know, every weekend.
Right.
So how important is the community in which you're operating to you as a farm and as a business and for agritourism?
Yeah. Sorry, my phone keeps blowing up. It's like I said, we're in a state of emergency. So when we first started, you know, everybody, people are funny, you know, whenever you start something new,
boy, you couldn't have said it better, man.
Yeah. I think of that. There's an old George Thorogood, song, you know, it's like, yeah, everybody's funny. Now you funny too. You know, it's like, you know, but, yeah, when we first started, I think everybody, thought and maybe kind of secretly wished we'd fail, you know,
really?
Holy yeah, smokes. Well, that's kind of the deal with anything that you venture out. I think that because people, again, people don't take risks, you know? So when they see somebody taking a risk, you know, there's that sort of knee jerk reaction, whether it's subconscious or whatever, that like, well, you know, and so, you know, when we first started out, and we had certainly failures, but the thing about an entrepreneur is, and I'm from Philadelphia, so home of Rocky Balboa, right? So it's all about staying in the ring, you know, like how many punches right. can you take, you know, and still get back right. up and fight. And most people are kind of like, it's like what Mike Tyson said. Yeah. Everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face, you know?
Right.
And, exactly. But we get hit in the face so much, you know, that we're used to it, you know? And so we just kept getting back up and getting back up. And probably about 6 years ago, something like that, we really turned a corner where it was very clear we're here to stay. And then kind of all the public opinion really shifted. And then it was like, you know, we have our own tea farm here in the upstate, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Wait, like all you of said sudden, it was about 6 years ago, right?
Yeah.
What? Didn't we do a podcast about that time? I'm not going to say it helped or it hurt. I'm not...
Take it. I'll run take with it, man. Yeah. Take the win.
Why not, right? Who else is gonna take it? No, Steve, I do appreciate your time. I appreciate what you guys are doing. I need to get up there to get some video of this museum and
for sure.
store. Yeah. It would be great to get some plants because we're trying to grow all different types of fruit plants. You know, I've got a hoop house. I think I mentioned this last time. I've stayed away from the farmers markets, but I love this part of it. I love talking to people who are growing things because it, to me, it's really relatable and it grounds you. And I think the philanthropy that you have experienced has kind of allowed you to take those punches and go, you know what? It could be worse. It could be a lot worse.
Way. For sure.
Any parting words before we leave?
Yes. One thing that I'm really proud of, we probably talked about it last time because we were just developing it, was Good Faith Grown. Did we mention that?
A little bit, I think.
Yeah. So we started a program that we call it an honesty and labeling program. Essentially what it was, and again, none, you know, hopefully I don't sound like some mountain curmudgeon. I probably am, but whatever. You know, we got really tired of USDA certified organic. The program was a hassle, expensive, you know, there were all kinds of loopholes and stuff. Anyway, it just, and we found in doing farmers markets and everything like that, that other people felt the same way. You know, like if you go to a farmer's market and ask somebody, hey, are you organic? Right. They kind of, they roll their eyes and they have to explain like how they do their practice, but we're not certified. And they go through all this stuff, right? They waste about 3 minutes at a point of sale. You do that 100 times, 300 minutes adds up, you know? And so we got sick of answering those questions. And so we created this thing called Good Faith Grown. And it's basically this website where you have a profile, and basically you can tell everything you would tell somebody at a farmer's market as far as what you do, when you do it, and why, you know. Tell your whole story. It gives you a thing on the website, a profile, a QR code that you can have at your booth or whatever, that when people ask us, like, hey, are you organic? We go, we're good faith grown. Scan the QR code. It'll tell you all of our practices. Boom, done. So that was, what, a 5-second point of sale? And it's only $35 a year. So no strings attached. And we love that program. So check that out at goodfaithgrown.com. We'd like to see, you know, the more people that join, the better it becomes. And it's actually global, and it's not a certification program. It's not an inspection thing. It's just a way for you to have that conversation quickly. So.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. I do remember that you had just started that process, I think, when we talked last. Awesome. Steve, always a pleasure to listen to you, to hear your stories. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Steve. And that's a wrap, folks. We made it together through this episode of the Farmers Market Podcast. In good spirits, a little humor, and lots of information. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Farmers Market Podcast. If you've enjoyed our segments, if you had an itching to shop local, you're officially part of the freshest crew around. You can catch every episode at thefarmersmarketpodcast.com. It's like visiting a farmer's market without the early wake-up call or the accidental tumble of tomatoes. We're also hanging out on Facebook, where you can find us at facebook.com/farmersmarketpodcast. Follow us, share a comment, or drop a photo of your latest market haul. Bonus points for oddly shaped vegetables. And hey, if you've got a farm, a market, or a great story to share, we'd love to have you on as a guest. Just visit our website, click Be a Guest, and let us know why you'd make the perfect addition to the podcast. And who knows, your story could inspire the next wave of local farmers and food lovers everywhere. All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. And remember, here on the Farmers Market Podcast, we keep it fresh, we keep it local. See you next time.
Strolling through the market, it's a beautiful day. Fresh picked produce just a step away. Meat and dairy from the farm to your plate. Homemade crafts that are truly great. Keep it fresh, keep it local. Celebrate the heart of a community focal. From veggies to honey, there's so much to see. The Farmers Market Podcast is the place to be. Learn about the farmers and the seeds they sow. The beekeeper's secrets and how gardens grow. Homesteading wisdom, tips galore. Every week, there's always more. Keep it fresh, keep it local. Celebrate the heart of the community focal. From veggies to honey, there's so much to see. The Farmers Market Podcast is the place to be. The cluck of the chickens, the buzz of the bees, fresh air and sunshine, it's all you need. Connecting with the farmers, the crafters too. Every episode there's something new. Keep it fresh, keep it local. Celebrate the heart of the community focal. From veggies to honey, there's so much to see. The Farmers Market Podcast is the place to be. So grab your basket and come along. Tune in each week for the freshest song. The Farmers Market Podcast, it's where you'll find stories of the land that connect us all in kind.
Is your phone charged up enough to do a little mini tour?
Probably.
You could just hold it with your hand and just kind of walk around and kind of do a...
I got the selfie stick.
Yeah. Oh, nice. You can get real close. That is awesome. Yeah. So this is the neighbor's house?
Well, this was their barn. So, like, this is where we have all of our product display. I don't know if you can see that by moving too fast.
Yeah, you might have to go in real close.
Okay. So, like... That work?
Well, yeah, there we go.
Okay. But yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff. I'm walking you through here. This is that hallway that I was telling you about.
So this is
the timeline of UST production.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Pretty cool. And that's the space. So
and you're doing lots of or have you started the classes already?
So that just looks like a classroom. This is where we end up our tour.
Oh, okay.
So So the second half of the tour is, basically, in here talking about our production, and we've got videos of the machinery working and all that kind of stuff. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now you didn't mention some of your most popular teas, but I know you do the black oolong tea?
Yep. Bear Claw is our most, one of our popular ones. We do a Walhalla Masala Chai, which is really great. But we've got all kinds of cool ones like Cousin Earl, which is our take on an Earl Grey.
Nice.
You know, everybody's got a weird cousin. Ours is just a weird Earl Grey. That's great. So